Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 162 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, great to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
Oh, wow. So we had the Crypto Summit last week. We were expecting some big things, and I think there are some good stuff that came out of it. There's still probably some question marks, but the big thing that we did see is they talked about a crypto reserve and a crypto stockpile. So the big difference there, the crypto reserve is Bitcoin only. The crypto stockpile is pretty much everything else that falls into that non-Bitcoin. So all the other altcoins that the U.S. government has a crap ton of from all of them taking it from other people. So exciting, although they pretty much said with the Bitcoin reserve, that no taxpayer funds are going to be used to buy it. So it's going to be budget neutral. So there's really not a lot of details of how they're going to acquire this Bitcoin, other than hopefully they keep the 200,000 Bitcoin that they already have and don't sell that. Because they've already lost, what, $17 billion of money by selling the crypto early. So they need a plan. And it sounds like Scott Bessent is going to be the one in charge of managing this, since he's a hedge fund manager from the past.
Yeah, I really liked what I read in the executive order. You know, once that thing came out, there was all these different takes. I feel like Bitcoin people are just never going to be happy no matter what, right? So it's like if there's a strategic Bitcoin reserve and they get everything they want, they're like, it's the government's going to take her. You know, it's like there's no victory for some of these Bitcoin people. But the way this executive order is written is about as good as you could ask for it to be written if you're in my shoes. Like having two separate things, treating Bitcoin separate from crypto. That's how I think, right? I'm constantly saying crypto and Bitcoin and separating the two. And honestly, the market is separating the two as well. I mean, Bitcoin's, if you look at market capitalization, Bitcoin's in a different world. And sometimes, and especially more recently, has been going in a different direction than the rest of crypto. So it has separated itself, and that makes sense. They talk about digital gold in the executive order, and when David Sacks presented it to Trump, he was like, this is basically creating a Fort Knox for digital gold. And I think that's not a bad way to explain it to a guy who's not in the weeds with Bitcoin. I mean, it makes sense. There was quite a few things that I liked about it. One, yeah, we go ahead and just draw a line in the sand. We're interested in collecting Bitcoin. And on the crypto side, we're interested in not just selling it, not just liquidating it. We need to have we need to have a place to store it and think. But there's nothing, the executive order states that they're not going to acquire any additional digital assets other than Bitcoin, unless it's through like criminal and civil forfeiture, which I think, okay, cool. Now we have a place to deposit that stuff and the U.S. government can benefit from it. That makes sense. The executive order actually has the line, there's a strategic advantage to being among the first nations with a strategic Bitcoin reserve. So like, that's a good understanding of the fact that whoever gets in first, regardless of what level, is going to benefit significantly. So I like that. And it asks the Secretary of Treasury to establish an office to administer and maintain control of custodial accounts. And, you know, it's initially capitalized by what we're already holding. And it even says, unless the rightful owner can be found, you know, because there's, what is it? Bitmain? No. There's about 100,000 Bitcoin of the 200 we hold that really belongs to the exchange that got hacked, right? Like that should go to them. So it's open to that. It's not just collecting Bitcoin that should otherwise be returned to rightful owners. So it's quite fair. And the line that I like the most, and I think it makes the most sense, is talking about the Treasury and Commerce Secretary, which is Scott Bessent and Howard Lutnick, right? Like these guys know how to get stuff done. They shall develop strategies to acquire Bitcoin in a budget neutral way that doesn't increase taxpayer costs. Brilliant, right? Because if you're imagine you're buying Bitcoin with taxpayer dollars and Bitcoin's going up and down, whenever you buy Bitcoin, you never buy the Pico bottom, right? So your opponents, if you're buying Bitcoin with taxpayer dollars, your opponent, you're just giving them ammunition to shoot you in the next campaign. And so for this, developing these budget neutral strategies, I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it, right? The United States owns a ton of real estate. A lot of the real estate the United States owns is still at the cost at which they bought it. So my understanding is the federal government still owns land that they paid Napoleon for in the Louisiana Purchase at pennies on the acre kind of deal. So that if they just say, all right, we're going to mark to market the value of all this stuff and generate a bunch of like basically assets, and then we're going to transfer some of those assets or sell off some of that land. I mean, you know, there's tons of federal land that you could sell to non-Chinese people and sell it to American citizens or American companies and turn it into Bitcoin. There's a lot of ways to do it. Same with gold, shifting away from some gold and into Bitcoin. There's honestly, some people are talking about potentially being able to pay for Bitcoin or pay your taxes in Bitcoin and avoid capital gains taxes, because you can do that with charitable donations. But to me, that is using taxpayer dollars, because they would be spending taxpayer dollars into the general fund rather than the Bitcoin going into the strategic reserve. So I don't know that one would qualify for the executive order, but you could raise a bond. There's definitely, I mean, MicroStrategy has proven that there's billions of dollars that's looking for to get additional Bitcoin exposure in the fixed income world. So there's a lot of ways to do it. Like, it would be hilarious if the federal government hasn't done a war bond since Vietnam or prior to that, but now we can do a Bitcoin bond and it'll be like overfunded. It'd be great. And I listened to a couple of proposed bonds that made sense, where it's like 10% of what we raise will buy Bitcoin, the rest will go into you know, spending, government spending. The bond will pay back 1% per year. At the end, at the end of 10 years, it's a 4.5% CAGR and a 50-50 split on the Bitcoin returns. Like, wow. That's like, if you have to buy bonds by your charter, if you're an institution, that's not a bad gig. No, and especially because you could sell the bond halfway through if you needed to liquidate, and whatever the Bitcoin returns would be at that moment, you would get paid some discounted version of that value, right? Because they still have to wait 5 years and time value money and things like that. But like a bond, raising a bond is not a terrible way for these guys to do it. And I like Bessent and I like Lutnick. They're smart guys. They know more about finance than I'll ever know. There's way more ways to do this. And I think the door's wide open for them to get it done, and they can get it done without going through Congress. Because as much as I like Cynthia Lummis and everything she's doing, and she finally has some co-sponsors now that it's obvious that Trump is on board, I think she had six co-sponsors on the bill. It's gonna be real, real, real tough to pass that.
Yeah, and I'm still hoping that does pass, and it's slowly working its way through. But I mean, one of the things that I heard that was kind of funny was the U.S. has a $3 billion strategic cheese reserve. Cheese. And I'm like,
corn, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are we doing with $3 billion of frozen cheese? I don't understand the point of that, but sell some of that. So sell a billion of that and buy Bitcoin.
Like, yeah, not only that, sell half of that cheese. And then sell the refrigerators or freezers that are keeping it frozen, and then create, you know, then you're saving however much you're saving on power and real estate from not holding that much daggum cheese, and now you get to buy Bitcoin. But I do think that they need to figure out a way to dollar cost average into Bitcoin, because like if you look at the way it's worked for El Salvador over 5 years, you know, they've been buying high, buying low, buying everything, and it's working out great. And it's kind of tough to be like, oh, look at these idiots, they bought high, because on the flip side, they were buying in November and December of 2022 when we were at $16,000 of Bitcoin. And so I think they need to figure out a way to dollar cost average in, so that they're not giving the other team a chance to blow them away with like, oh, look at these dummies with it being stupid with your money. So I think that's important. Other than that, so that's the government. Like, I'm American and I want America to win at everything, and Bitcoin is a game at which I'd like for them to win at. So, okay, check. After that, it's putting everybody on notice that the Overton window has shifted way over, so that Bitcoin is like wide open. Now we have the United States has Bitcoin as a target, and it's not just a couple people talking about it. It's happening. And so this is the, you know, some people can't dodge a punch. They actually have to just watch the fist come all the way and connect to their nose. All these other countries, they see the punch coming now, right? Like it's getting closer. And I think some of them are understanding it. Belarus was in the news talking about, hey, we have excess power available. Other people are making money and other countries are creating strategic Bitcoin reserves. We need to do that as well. So like that's Belarus, right? I mean, the thing about the countries is there's almost 200 of them. 7 of them really matter. 20 of them matter. Everything from 21 to 180, whatever. They don't really matter from a money standpoint, but it does matter from a momentum game theory, you know, putting the pressure like we talked about with El Salvador. Once El Salvador is in, Costa Rica, Panama, Colombia, all those countries need to start thinking about it. And then once Bhutan is in, you know, another swath of country needs to look at it. Belarus is in the same boat, you know, like they've got pressure coming from Russia. You know, they see what the United States is doing. So they're, from a game theory standpoint, they're kind of squeezed both ways. Like, man, everybody's doing it that influences our economy. So I think that's surprising that we're here now. I feel like corporations are like losing the lead to sovereign wealth funds and countries, which I felt like corporations would be running for years before countries got into it. But I mean, hell, normal people aren't buying Bitcoin yet.
No, that's so crazy. Yeah, I did read about some of the countries like South Korea now, because of the executive orders from Trump, they're now looking at a strategic reserve and actually doing a yuan-backed stablecoin, right? The UK has kind of come out and said the opposite. They're not following in the UK's or the US's footsteps, which is kind of crazy considering the UK was leading almost in the past and thinking they had to be one of the financial places because there's nothing else really in the UK for them to export, and now they're backing away from it. The ECB apparently is pretty worried about Trump's support of the dollar-backed stablecoin, so they think it's going to be detrimental to the EU's monetary autonomy, right? They can't just print money anytime they want anymore. So they're planning on launching their digital euro. Well, the details are going to come out in Q2. Apparently, it's still going to take some time to roll out, but at least we'll know more about it, what it's going to do and how it's going to work then. So yeah, it's definitely put a lot of countries on notice for sure.
Yeah, but so two quick things on what you just said. Okay, so you got the UK and they're not following the US in this path towards Bitcoin strategic reserve. The United States is the wind and the UK is a sailboat. And the sailboat decided, I'm not going to go in the direction of the wind. Like that might work for a little while, but you're screwed, right? Like the best you can do is stay still while everybody else is moving forward. So good luck with that strategy, UK. And then when it comes to Europe, man, this Trump thing where they're like, look, Europe is relying on NATO to defend all of Europe. NATO relies on the United States to create all of the defense in NATO, not all, whatever it is, 80%, 70%. And Trump's like, look, you need to defend yourself. Like we have an ocean. We have Canada and Mexico. That's we're easy to defend. We're defending the rest of the world. So he's pulling back on that stuff. And a lot of it's over this Ukrainian thing. And for all I know, it's all art of the deal stuff where he's being hyperbolic on what he wants and he'll settle for less. Anyway, so the Europeans are kind of scrambling to figure out how to defend themselves. And so I read this article from Reuters, I think. It was a reputable one. It's hard to find reputable news sources, but it was one where it was like, okay, I think this is right. Man, they're trying to raise $800 billion to increase their military. $150 billion is a loan against their unused budget funds. So printing money. Right? Like, hey, we haven't spent this money yet. Can we get a loan against it before we spend it down? So there's $150 billion, and $650 billion is going to be unlocked by being more flexible with EU's fiscal rules, which is printing money. Like, so They have literally no, they can't even come up with $50 billion to be like, hey, $50 billion, we're going to reallocate actual money that we've already printed. And then the 750 we're going to print. They can't even do that. 800 billion out of 800 billion is getting printed out of nothing. And so they used a bunch of funny words like that, but they should have just said, we're going to print 800 billion euros. Sorry. So Europe's out. Europe doesn't have any squeezing left to squeeze, right? And so when we talk about money printing and what it does for Bitcoin and liquidity entering the markets, like, okay, China's already been printing. Now Europe's going to print. And guess who's next?
Yeah. And we could talk about politics in Europe and stuff like that, but let's kind of go back to crypto because this is going to derail and put us on a tangent.
No problem.
I do want to talk more about the crypto summit because, I mean, it was only half an hour worth of stuff there, right? And then they had a 2-hour closed door meeting that we don't know a ton about. So in the half an hour, I mean, there were some interesting things said, but it was mainly just talking about how excited everybody was. I know Brian Armstrong, the Coinbase CEO, came out afterwards and said he's pretty excited. Based on all of that, they're going to hire about 1,000 people in the U.S. because now the U.S. is reasonable in terms of crypto regulation. I mean, we were very unreasonable in the last administration. And then also Coinbase is going to be offering 24/7 Bitcoin and Ethereum futures for the first time to U.S. clients. So, I mean, we're in a totally different spot than we were just a few months ago. And even the Winklevoss twins, they were on there and they said a year ago, they thought it was going to be a lot more likely they were going to be in jail than guest of the White House. I kind of laughed at that. I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah. But I mean, all that being said, there's still a huge problem, I think, with the perception of crypto. I mean, if you look at what's going on with the media, I mean, Rachel Maddow on MSNBC came out and compared crypto to Beanie Babies after this, saying that, and she pretty much said, she's like, I don't understand crypto at all, but here's what I think it is. And everybody's like, if you don't understand it, why are you going on a major news outlet and saying this when it's nothing similar to that at all? And I think Zeke Fall, he insisted crypto was just like an offshore casino. So, I mean, you have these still left-leaning media outlets that are saying crypto is bad and they're going to try to use this as ammunition to say what Trump is doing is wrong. And we're like, man, what is going on right now? So I think you have about 18 months before this all starts again, where the left starts to attack crypto. And I don't know if Elizabeth Warren gets more power or gets more say-so in all of this, but we still got a lot left to do in order for something to happen. And you really need something like the Cynthia Lummis Bitcoin Act to get passed so that we actually have something in the books rather than just executive orders from the president.
Yeah, I agree. I saw that Rachel Maddow monologue that she did. And I was in my head, I'm like, okay, there's 40,000-50,000 people watching her show that watched her show for her. That clip may get several million views online. 5% of the people viewing that are viewing it to get ticked off at her.
Yeah.
Like, they're not viewing it because they agree with her. Like, she, you said left leaning, but I think she's leaned so far left she fell over. Like, she's off the rails.
And I was being nice.
But it was crazy because the first words out of her mouth is like, I have no idea what I'm talking about, but here I'm going to talk about it for the next 2 minutes. And it's Beanie Babies. I'm like, oh yeah, Beanie Babies. Like, Bitcoin's been out for 15 years and has been on a steady march. And when you average Bitcoin over 2-3 years, it's on a steady march upward. Like, I mean, it almost sounds like people that were like, oh, the internet's a fad. Computers aren't going to catch on. You know, like, who wants a mobile phone? You know, I like to have my personal time and be away from things. It's like, look, guys, it's gunpowder, right? Like, you cannot use it. That's fine. But eventually you'll have to use it because other people are using it.
Yeah, and you can only bring a knife to a gunfight so often before you learn, okay, maybe I should bring a gun.
Exactly. And like, oh, I don't understand it. She's in the news. She's been hearing about Bitcoin since at least 2012. Right. So she's had 12 years to sit down and do a little bit of research. Hasn't done it. Like, is that who you're going to listen to? I think it's kind of hilarious. And then on the White House crypto summit. So they're basically, you know, YouTube does live feeds and broadcasts and stuff now. And So I was like, okay, I was looking to tinkering around the house. And so I put it on and put my AirPod on, and it was like, I was on hold forever. And I was like, but I mean, this was pretty substantial, you know, like they made a kind of a big deal about it. So I was like, oh, I'll listen to it. And yeah, there was about 30 minutes and it, you know, they had to introduce everybody. It took forever. And then they talked about the World Cup, and they had the World Cup statue, and they burned 10, 12 minutes on the World Cup statue and stuff. I'm like, where is this going? And then the feed cut, like when it was supposed to cut, I'm like, this is the most crazy, useless thing to watch ever. And then I'm expecting to get all these reports about what's going on, you know, da, da, da. It, very hush hush. No, nobody seems to be talking about it. And so, maybe they're actually going to do something, because you don't want to tell everybody your plan to acquire Bitcoin and do all these things, and then they can front run you. So maybe they'll actually do something. I have no idea what is going to come from this, but I like the momentum, and I like the energy and the direction of crypto and Bitcoin. And I think, you know, Michael Saylor's in the room. That helps from a Bitcoin versus crypto standpoint. And he might, he's so deep into Bitcoin that I think it's tough for him to talk to people that aren't into Bitcoin. I think that he's on a PhD thesis, and a lot of people are in fourth grade. And so when he talks, I think it sounds pretty crazy to people that aren't into it. So, but you have somebody in there that's like, hey guys, like stop saying crypto and thinking that we're talking about Bitcoin, right? Like Coinbase has to see the difference. I mean, you know, if you're selling 400 products and one product is driving everything, maybe that's a different animal than the rest. So hopefully that's what's happening. I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens. I feel like as soon as they announced the strategic Bitcoin reserve, all the air got taken out of the pricing, and, you know, it happened to the stock market. It feels like a rush to safety kind of thing, where everybody's selling everything because of all of the uncertainty with tariffs and everything else. Legitimately, we're at a price now that's pretty close to where we were at the peaks of the trading range, and that $50,000 to $70,000 trading range last year. Except now we have a government that's really supporting Bitcoin, and it feels like, you know, $80,000+ per Bitcoin is a nice discount. And I always feel like there's a discount, because I think, you know, half the market cap of gold is easy plucking for Bitcoin to reach. And, you know, that's $500,000 or so now. And so, yeah, 80 grand, 90 grand is not a bad price to buy in. So I'm curious to see what happens, man. They put actual people in the room, and it wasn't like they brought them to a congressional hearing to beat them up and tell them that they're funding terrorism like the last guys did. So yeah, good progress in the right direction. I just don't know what they talked about.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there is still a ton of fear in most places. I mean, you look at the fear and greed index, and it's still pretty low, although the price is way higher than it was last time. The fear level was at this level. And you look at the states, right? We kind of are expecting the states to try to front run the U.S. government, and Utah ended up passing their Bitcoin bill, but they stripped out the strategic reserve part of it, so they don't actually have a Bitcoin strategic reserve in it. So now kind of the two leaders, Arizona seems to be the one that's closest to getting over the finish line and having a strategic reserve, although Texas just passed their Senate Bill 21. I think they passed it like 25-5, so it's a pretty big majority there. It's going to create a Bitcoin strategic reserve, but now it has to be voted by the House next. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think there's still a chance that somebody does this, but we've already had, what, 5-6 states that have said, okay, yeah, we're going to pass a bill, but it's not going to include a Bitcoin strategic reserve. And I think there's a ton of fear and a ton of education that still needs to happen, right? There's only a couple people that really understand this at a decent enough level to say, okay, we need to do this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're in the state of Georgia. The state of Georgia is constitutionally required to be a balanced budget, right? So every so often, like when they'll over collect taxes, and then they'll kick back several $100 in a check to taxpayers or to everybody in the state. Like, hey, Georgia, just pass a little bill. It's like, hey, instead of kicking it back to the people, we're going to build a Bitcoin strategic reserve. and you could just have that built in. I mean, you know, these are the kind of things that states need to think about as far as how they can do things. They don't, because we're 50 different states with 50 different constitutions, you know, you kind of got to figure out how you get in and how it works for you. You know, Texas has their power grid and all of the benefits that they're getting from Bitcoin miners. So there's a lot they can do to kind of leverage that instead of just collecting taxes and buying Bitcoin. So I'm curious to see kind of how these states shake out. And I do keep seeing like this state had the bill struck down in this, you know, the House or Senate or whatever. And, you know, so it's like it feels like a little bit of a race to get there first. And knowing that the federal government's got something cooking like this, I think that helps push things. But everybody's got to figure it out. And a bunch of these dudes are old. A bunch of, you know, it's tough to get them to get into Bitcoin. Like, but if they got a 25-year-old kid or 30-year-old kid that's in their ear about like, hey, this is how it's going to work, you know, maybe that'll help. But it's going to happen. One of these states is going to pass it. And then all you need is one. And maybe it's like El Salvador and it takes 4 or 5 years before somebody else says, this is, look how good that state's doing. We need to be doing well for our population as well. So it's Bitcoin, man. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. So one of the other things that happened that probably could be bigger news than the whole crypto summit was the Office of Comptroller of the Currency changed its mind on crypto for the most part, right? So they rescinded OCC 1179 back from November of 2021. Which pretty much means that it's now open season for banks and crypto. It allows banks to custody crypto. They can run nodes, which is amazing, I guess, at this point now. And then there's going to be the ability to enable a bunch of stablecoin activity. So this is going to be, I think, super exciting because before, I mean, we talked about Chokepoint 2.0 and all this. Banks can't really touch crypto and we're going to debank you if you are doing anything with crypto. It's done like a full 180 now, and now banks can be a part of this. And there's stablecoin legislation that is in the works. The Genius stablecoin bill will be voted on this week by the Senate Banking Committee. So there's just so much moving forward right now. And if the banks can get on board and they can make money on this, holy cow. I mean, they're going to want to make money on this and they're going to want to beat everybody else to the punch.
Yeah. And even if they don't need to make a ton of money off this, because it's not like they're going to have to hire multiple people and new tellers and no, you just need to allow people to custody Bitcoin, or you just need to really do what PayPal and Venmo do, which is just add a little icon so you can click on crypto, you can buy and sell and get in and out and be like, you know, a little crypto exchange. And people want to save in Bitcoin, they go from their checking account into their Bitcoin savings account. That's all you need to do, and then you collect some transaction fees. And honestly, there's probably some company out there that's going to sell them the software as the widget to add to their website, and they can figure out their custody solutions, or they can outsource their custody solutions to companies like Coinbase. You know, it's going to be a fairly easy thing for them to plug in if the regulations allow it. And if the regulations don't, then it's impossible. that's kind of where we're at.
Well, we've talked about Fold a lot in the past, and Fold is kind of one of those only Bitcoin bank-ish type companies out there that has now been listed on the NASDAQ, and they're a public company. They got 1,000+ Bitcoin in their treasury, and they're serving such a small percentage of the people out there, but it's a people that love Bitcoin. If the rest of the people could have access to services like that and get Bitcoin, and these banks could make a crap ton of money from being the ones that are servicing Bitcoin, like it's going to take off. So it's exciting to see that banks are going to have that ability. This is probably way too many years too late, but it is what it is.
Yeah. And just imagine if you're a bank and you offer this and you just decide, okay, all my transaction fees, I'm going to convert that into Bitcoin and I'm going to store it on my bank balance sheet. And that it's not going to cost me a penny for me to build a Bitcoin portfolio for the bank and for the bank shareholders. So I think that there's Bitcoin benefits people that are connected to the network. So if you're a bank and you connect to the network, great. If you rehypothecate other people's Bitcoin and you loan against it and do all of that, you're probably toast. So I'm like curious to see kind of what happens here, you know, from a Bitcoiner standpoint and like an anti-government overreach and you know, anti-banking sovereign individual standpoint. It does kind of suck, but Bitcoin was going to do this. It just is a matter of when. And I've already, I said a couple of years ago, every individual has had plenty of opportunity to expose themselves to Bitcoin and to figure it out and to buy some and to hold it in self-custody or put it on exchange. They, every single person that's got a dollar to fold in half has had a chance to turn it into Bitcoin. I don't feel bad about it. Like corporations are into it. Countries are into it. And if you're an individual with money and you're on the sidelines, then there's nobody to blame but yourself.
Well, I do think it's important to kind of talk a little bit about the Bitcoin price because it is down compared to where it has been and everybody's worried about it. I mean, it's dipped under 80K. But when I talk to most people about it, I'm like, well, look at the rest of the market. The S&P and the NASDAQ has had some pretty record drawdowns here recently. You have whatever's going on with the tariff situation, and that's driving a lot of this recession talk and things like that. And I mean, even the ECB, they've cut their interest rates, I think the sixth time last week, right? So there's a lot of stuff happening over there that we're trying to fight against over here still. And once all that starts getting cut, then it's kind of open season for things like Bitcoin. So, I mean, yes, it sucks, but this is also, I think, one of those opportunities where for the next X amount of time, Bitcoin's is kind of on sale. So enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're kind of out of sync with the Bitcoin cycles. We're still in range of all the Bitcoin cycles, but it still feels weird. You know, we had all-time highs prior to the halving, which we'd never had. So we kind of had an elevated price coming into this cycle. But, you know, we've got this new administration that's like, yeah, there's going to be some temporary pain. While we have to get inflation under control, we have to lower the 10-year, like the 10-year rate has to come down, because we have $10 trillion worth of debt that has to be refinanced. And if we do it at 4.5%, then we're toast. The budget's toast. And all we're, so, you know, we got to eat it a little bit. And right now we're eating it. So this is a great time to get pick up whatever, right? Stock price to earnings ratios are down. Bitcoin's down. Like, this is, if you've got the cash, man, this is the time to buy. This is why you hold dry powder, is so you can dollar cost average into these dips. Politics don't allow these things to last long anymore. Like, it, once they get interest rates down and inflation comes down, guess what the next move is? Ah, interest rates are down. People are going to go get loans. When people go get loans, brand new money's printed. So, you know, you don't have to have a proper QE. The way the structure is built, like, debt creates new money. So once that liquidity starts to pop off, guess what happens to asset prices? They go up. Like, this is not a hard one to see unless something stupid crazy happens and politicians decide to hang themselves so that they can improve the budget, which I don't see happening. Then guess what's going to happen, man? They're going to print, you know, in some way and using some funky words that doesn't say we're printing money, and it's going to happen, and it'll probably happen about a year from the midterms. So that'll be November, right? So, like, we're getting close. And you just kind of have to eat it for a while. I talked about selling those duplexes and getting into MSTR and MSTN. It sucks because I can see the value of the assets going down. But the value of my real estate went down too. I just didn't know it because I didn't put it up for sale. So, like, it kind of sucks to see it, but I'm not selling it, and it's cash flowing the way I wanted it to cash flow, and it'll pop back up. So if I don't have a long-term view that all this stuff is going to go up against the dollar, I don't know what to do. Like, what are you, like, if the dollar falls apart and all these assets are going to go down against the dollar, like, you're literally toast. So, you know, it sucks for the value of your things to go down, but in a long term, they have to go up. So you just wait.
Yeah. I was looking at the Bitcoin and Ethereum fund flows, and in the past month, they've been pretty negative. So I think 4.7 billion in the last month have left the ETF funds. The last week of February alone was 2.9 billion, so what, 60 something percent of it. So it is getting less at this point, right? It's slowing down, but it's, I mean, it's still a big number. And I think the other thing too is what's crazy, it's after MicroStrategy went for what, 12 or something weeks of buying Bitcoin, they've now gone for 2 weeks of not buying Bitcoin.
So, they did announce that they're going to add 21 billion of Bitcoin buying pressure from their Strike 8% preferred stock issuance thing that we talked about a couple weeks ago. So yeah, now they had a 21-21 plan, and now it seems like a 21-21-21 plan, which is $63 billion. You know, that's not bad.
And it's coming. We just don't know when, right? But it's, yeah, it's around the corner theoretically. I mean, they bought so much so quickly that I think everybody was expecting them to just continue buying and max out their 42, now 63 million sooner than the 2 years. So
yeah, but I mean, if you're into Bitcoin, 2 years is a long time to dollar cost average when you think the price is low. He also doesn't care. He doesn't care what the price is. He's getting money at 0% and buying Bitcoin that like immediately. So he doesn't, if he buys it at 95 instead of 86, who cares?
Yeah, I think it's been interesting to see a lot of his buys have been in the 90s lately. And now that it's been in the 70s and 80s, there's not been a lot of buys out of MicroStrategy. And you're like, man, why are you not taking advantage of this?
I think it's tougher for him to buy in the dips because of the way he has to issue stock to buy at the market. And the bond issuance stuff, that just occurs like he ladders. It's all about timing. It is about when his stock price is high enough to convert the note to free up the credit so that he can re-leverage and get a new note. And so a lot of that has to do with time and stock price. So he doesn't, and when Bitcoin's down, the stock price is down, so he can't convert those notes. So it's easier for him to buy when the price goes up. Is pretty crappy to think about as a person who likes to buy stuff low or thinks they're low, but that's, I think that's the way he's built, is, and that's the way other corporations are going to be built.
All right, so let's switch over to some of the stuff that's happening around the world. I know we've talked a ton about this and the issuance of time. We'll try to talk about a few other things. So I did read Thailand approved USDT and USDC for trading on crypto exchanges. That'll actually be available on the 16th of March. So it's coming up right around the corner. That's a big deal, right? I mean, instead of being like the rest of the countries and creating their own stablecoin, they're just approving two of the biggest ones out there and saying, all right, yep, we're on board. Use these. Let's move forward and make Thailand one of the crypto meccas at this point compared to everybody else that's fighting against it.
I think it's smart. Why take a government and try to build something that's already been built better than you can build it?
Yep. India announced that it sounds like they're going to let Coinbase back in. So Coinbase left in 2022 due to some regulatory pressure, but they just secured the FIU registration. So they're expecting retail customers be allowed to start trading later this year with Coinbase, which, I mean, I think Coinbase has come out and said India's a huge market, big target. Now that they're actually becoming a little bit more crypto friendly, we'll talk to them. They were kind of going the wrong way for a little bit. But that's exciting to see a country the size of India that is seeing the light as well.
Yeah, and the Indian population is very tech forward and open to stuff like this. So like culturally, I think it's a good fit too.
And while this isn't specifically tied to any specific crypto, Brazil's Postal Service announced that they're going to be looking to utilize blockchain and AI to enhance their business practices and operational efficiency and their internal supply management. So it's exciting to see that blockchain and theoretically crypto, because something will have to power a lot of that blockchain, will probably be used in Brazil to make their postal service work better. So that's exciting.
That's like sandbox stuff. Like if they figure it out, then other people figure it out. I mean, it's, you know, productivity is improving all the time. And if you can buckle a new technology in with your existing performance and improve things, it's only good.
We've talked a lot about remittances around the world. Pakistan just came out and announced that they're looking at blockchain. They have like multi-billion dollars of dollar remittances back to Pakistan from abroad. And they're thinking blockchain is the best way to handle this. I think, shoot, you and I could have told him that a long time ago, but
Jack Mallers could have. Jack Mallers actually built an entire company around this.
Yeah. So they're waking up to that idea, and it looks like they're going to start trying to do that as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's just use Strike, like just allow Strike to do it for you. Simple. Done.
We talked about banks before. Spain had a pretty big announcement. Their second largest bank, BBVA, is soon going to enable customers to buy, sell, and manage Bitcoin and Ethereum on its app. Now, this is really targeting kind of the private big customers right now, but they do plan to enable all of it, all their customers at some point in the near future. And we're talking about a 150-year-old bank that's doing this, right? So to me, that's a big deal to see a bank in Spain, one of the largest banks in Spain, say, okay, yes, we want to do crypto for all of our customers.
Yeah, they should do it. I mean, I do like that we're talking about this sort of news and not like some really eccentric countries doing eccentric things like Spain banking. Like those are good. That's a good topic to be talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty notable country, right? It's not saying the smallest country in the world is saying, oh yeah, we want to do crypto banking. It's a pretty big company, big country. We talked about El Salvador earlier. They just, I guess, are collaborating with Paraguay on some crypto regulation. This is the second time that El Salvador has done this in the last 3 months. 3 months ago, they did it with Argentina. So you're seeing a bunch of these South American companies work with El Salvador because El Salvador kind of has it figured out and try to make crypto regulation a stronger thing down there, though, so they can deal with all the craziness that goes on with money in the world.
I mean, countries that have their own currency that are falling apart, like I don't even know if Paraguay is dollarized or not, but you got a lot of opportunity to kind of help yourself out and skip some technologies if you're, you know, if you can plug into the Bitcoin network or just using it in general, just to reduce some of the friction that you've got and give your people a chance to get out of your currency and into assets, you know, without having to buy real estate in giant chunks.
And then in some, I'll call it non-Bitcoin news, or all this is still kind of related to Bitcoin. So Starkware, I don't know if you remember Starkware, the company that was doing some of the ZK technology. They launched an L2 on Ethereum that was all based on ZK, zero knowledge. They just recently announced that they are creating their Bitcoin strategic reserve. So they call themselves a Bitcoin standard company, which is interesting because they're based on the Ethereum network. But what they have said is they have three developments that they are working on right now that they want to help unify Bitcoin and Ethereum. And this is something we've been talking about for a while, is the interoperability between all these chains is huge. The first one is Xverse, which is a Bitcoin wallet. It is set to integrate with Starknet. So you can move Bitcoin and Ethereum back and forth on the Starknet network. They're going to launch Bitcoin or BTCFi season, which is a program designed to offer yield opportunities on Bitcoin through Starknet, which is kind of interesting. And then the Bravos wallet on Starknet is going to support one-click payments on the Lightning Network. So they're trying to make it easy and for money to go across all these different chains, which is exciting. I don't know how many people will use it right now, but it's still, like we talked about, this, I think interoperability is hugely important. I think zero knowledge is going to be a big deal in the future, just from a privacy perspective too. So this will be a good thing, I think, long term.
I think I'm hearing yield opportunities on Bitcoin in a couple of different places. Strike is coming out with some yield program that I'm curious to see how it works. He hasn't talked about it much. He's just alluded to the fact that it's coming, because yield on Bitcoin is a tricky thing. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. But after the BlockFi situation, I'm going to be super skeptical about yield bearing programs on Bitcoin. And but like, what is it, Linden does yield on Bitcoin, and it's like wildly over collateralized, and they haven't had a big problem, but they've been doing it at least a cycle and a half, so they've seen some wild swings. And so I think it's possible, but it's not going to be as attractive, I think, as a lot of people want it to be.
Well, it's interesting. Bitwise just made an announcement that they're partnering with Maple Finance And Maple Finance has kind of been doing the same thing, over-collateralized loans in the DeFi space for a little while. So I think Bitwise is getting about 9.5% returns on the stablecoins, which isn't bad, right? I mean, they're targeting industrial lending. They're not doing it with all their money, but while they have money that is just sitting there, 9.5% isn't a bad thing to get too. And it's stablecoins are pretty much the same thing as holding it in cash. So if you're not going to turn into Bitcoin, might as well get some returns on it.
Yeah, but when you're getting twice as much as the Fed funds rate, you kind of need to know what's under the hood in this crypto world. Like, banks will get bailed out if they're doing something stupid. The federal government has proven that they will just give them money and you'll be okay. But Maple may not get bailed out. Yeah. Bitwise certainly won't. So, you know, you kind of got to have that in the back of your mind.
Yep. And then VanEck just filed for an Avalanche ETF in Delaware. So Avalanche, which ticker sign is AVAX, they are down 55% this year. So that's kind of crazy. But it is the first Avalanche ETF that has been filed for. Avalanche has been a pretty cool L1 that there's been a lot of talk about gaming being used on the Avalanche. And it's got, we're not going to go into detail, but it's got some pretty cool features that I think a lot of other chains don't have. So we'll see what happens, but it's exciting to see there's still ETFs being filed for chains that are down a ton right now.
I mean, everything's down a ton. If you're going to file anything, it's all down. So, and if you look at it down from their all-time highs, it's way worse.
And then last two things that I had. One, Fold, we talked about them. They are about to release a Fold credit card that will be 2% back on Bitcoin on everything. So if you're interested, you got to jump on the wait list. There's a link in the show notes to get access, referral to that. Feel free to use that. But it'll be, I think, kind of exciting to see. I mean, 2% back on Bitcoin and all your spend is a pretty big deal. It's hard to get 2% back in general on a lot of things. On Bitcoin, that'd be great, especially right now where you expect it to double, triple, or more in the next year or so.
Yeah, and if you compare it to airline miles, which are the like wildly inflationary, like if you look at how many miles it takes to fly, you know, New York to LA over the course of years, it just goes up and up and up. The dollar value of those miles goes down. The dollar value of the Bitcoin goes up over those kind of time frames. So it becomes a very attractive credit card to hold and allows you to stack Bitcoin and like without having to spend money on Bitcoin. So it's not bad.
And then the last thing I saw, and I guess I'm probably interested to see if you got this. The IRS is sending out letters to anybody that's done, I think, crypto before to say, hey, are you sure you paid the right amount of taxes on your crypto?
Yeah. We have no idea how much you were supposed to pay, but we think it's more than you paid.
Yeah. I kind of laughed and be like, I haven't really taken any profit and I've paid a lot of taxes on crypto. So I'm not sure what else you're expecting out of me. Like, what is wrong here? But yeah, I saw that letter and they were like, you don't have to respond to us if you've done this or not. But if you want to go back and change your tax returns and pay more taxes, then you're welcome to do that. And I was like, I have a feeling I'm the wrong person that you're sending this to. You're just sending this to anybody that's ever paid taxes on crypto before.
Yeah.
So thought that was funny.
Yeah, that's pretty hilarious. But I mean, you know, if you're the IRS, it's probably worth sending out a letter. I mean, I'm sure they get a discount on stamps.
What else did I miss?
So the only thing I got in my notes that we didn't talk about was Tucker Carlson interviewing SBF from prison.
Could see that.
I listened to it and while I was working on it around the house, and it wasn't bad, man. A lot of the talk was about prison life and like kind of all of that stuff. And SBF, you know, he just kind of sounded pretty normal. You know, he talked about kind of how difficult things were. Like, it was difficult to get in touch with his lawyers. It's difficult to kind of go through, you know, do these things. And Diddy is in, like, he's interacted with Diddy in prison because they're in the same area. And he's like, yeah, he's nice. What a crazy freaking world where Tucker Carlson's interviewing SBF from prison. He talked a little bit about, like, he didn't sound like, he sounded like a guy that was like, man, if I just had more time, I would have been able to give everybody their money back. And everybody was made whole, but he did acknowledge that they were made whole in dollar value, which sucks. But yeah, man, like he was just kind of funny to hear from him. I mean, he's talking about like, there's some guys in here that didn't
graduate from middle school, but they can play chess at a very high level. Like, I didn't expect that. But after the interview, he got put in solitary confinement because he didn't get approval to do the interview. And they're very picky about who their prisoners talk to. And so he paid a pretty stiff penalty for being interviewed by Tucker Carlson. But, you know, I mean, he's trying to get his voice out there and trying to, you know, I mean, what else are you going to do? He's like, you know, every day is similar to the previous day. So I still don't feel bad for him. You know, he did what he did. He's smart enough to know the risks of stealing from people and gambling with their money and hoping to be able to pay them back. So he did that, and he wasn't able to do it, and now he's in jail. So there you go.
For another 24 years, thank goodness. So
yeah, well, that should be long enough for him to not screw things up. And also, he kind of has to sit there and watch Bitcoin price go up to over 100,000 while he can't trade it. So that's kind of fun to think about too.
Yeah. Awesome. So this was a packed week, a lot of stuff. I don't feel like we have something upcoming in the next couple of days that's going to make this week or our next week conversation be really exciting to talk about, like the Crypto Summit was this week. But that doesn't mean that there's not going to be some fireworks that happen in the crypto space right now, because right now there's just so much going on. It's exciting to watch.
Well, every Sunday seems to have a lot of price action up or down. So, you know, there's a Sunday in between now and the next time we talk. We'll see what happens.
Awesome. Well, great talking with you, Hal. We'll chat again next week.
Sounds good, Jason. Thanks a lot.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.